Labor and Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:05 on, let's say, 24th, 25th? 25th of April.
Yep.
With us are Representative Mark Newman, Representative Berta Gardner, Representative Bob Book, and myself, Chair Olson, and Representative Jay Rammers. Let's see, first bill up today is House Bill 233, Unclaimed Phone and Electrical Co-ops. Not quite the full title, but...
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Derek Miller, and I'm staff to Representative Mike Kelly, and I'm here to present HB 233 for you. The purpose of HB 233 addresses the sometimes burdensome and ineffective noticing requirements of unclaimed property law regarding capital credits for electric and telephone cooperatives. Electric and telephone cooperatives from time to time receive excess revenue from members that exceed the expenses of the operations of that cooperative. The cooperative keeps these excess revenues in a member-owned capital account called capital credits on behalf of that member. Cooperatives may refund a portion of accumulated capital credits, but in some cases, the cooperative seeking to refund those credits no longer has a valid address for that member for one reason or another. As a result, many of these capital credits go unclaimed. Current Alaska unclaimed property law allow for credits to revert back to the cooperative as long as the cooperative, at least 6 months prior to that reversion, has done a couple things, and those things are, one, mailed a notice to the last known address of the member, publishes a notice of the proposed reversion in the same manner required by law or court rule, and three, publishes a notice of the unclaimed capital credits four times during four consecutive calendar weeks in a newspaper of local circulation. While mailing to last known address of members sometimes results in finding members, newspaper publication does not result in a significant increase in the number of members who cash their capital credit checks, particularly for rural cooperatives. As a result, cost of compliance with this notice requirement is significant and the effectiveness is at best questionable. HB 233 allows cooperatives the option of using the internet instead of newspaper publication to notify its members of these unclaimed capital credits. It's pretty simple in nature, and this bill is supported by the Alaska Village Electric Co-op and Copper Valley Electric Association. I believe there are some folks online that may be able to testify as well on behalf of this bill.
Representative Gardner and then Representative Booth.
Thank you. It seems to me it's a very interesting sort of common sense bill. But my question is, if the unclaimed property can revert back to the cooperative after a year, is it? 6 months. No.
6 months.
6 months.
Representative Gardner through the chair.
Why would the list be posted for only 30 days? Why not post them for the whole 6 months since there's no cost? I mean, the cost is maybe just a slight cost in putting them up, but once they're there, there's no additional cost.
Representative Garner through the chair, and are you talking about the 30 days on the internet?
Yes.
I'm not quite sure I have an answer for you on that, Representative Garner. I believe Bob Wilkinson or Mara Kohler may be online that may be able to answer that question for you. And I don't see a reason why we couldn't bump that up.
Thank you.
Representative Booth.
The statement request for finding members through newspaper publications is not particularly effective. It is more effective according to your in urban cooperatives. Could you give me the rationale or some sort of a reason why it doesn't work in the other cooperatives?
Representative Book through the chair. Again, we do have some of these rural CEOs of some of these co-ops.
Pardon, what was that?
We have some of the CEOs of the rural cooperatives online that may be able to tell you a little bit more about that, but I don't think that these newspapers of general circulation are reaching the constituent base that these co-ops are serving, as well as perhaps the internet. Alaska is determined to be the most wired state in the union.
Right.
So that was kind of the logic.
I raised that because I think it's a particularly substance to this bill that it should be brought before the committee that there basically isn't access to newspapers in rural communities. That's all I
Seeing no more questions, I think we'll go to Glenn Ellen. Robert Wilkinson?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify. And members of the committee, my name is Robert Wilkinson, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Copper Valley Electric. I did furnish written testimony down to the members of the committee yesterday. I hope you've got it in your packet. I just want to supplement that testimony and then if it pleases the committee, respond to the two questions that were raised by Rep. Gardner and Rep. Book. Copper Valley is a nonprofit cooperative corporation organized in Alaska under Statute 10.25. We serve approximately 3,600 customers in Valdez and the greater Copper River Basin. I refer to us as the greater Copper River Basin, somewhat tongue-in-cheek. It's an area the size of the state of West Virginia, as I understand it. We have a dozen or more communities up and down the road, so we have a big area that we serve. Any monies that we do collect over and above the expense of providing electric service do belong to the members who paid those monies in. And in fact, at the end of the year when we have the leftover funds, we allocate those back to an account in the name of each member pending refunding those dollars some year in the future. Refunds of this patronage capital sometimes is not made for a generation or longer. And in fact, most of Alaska's electric co-ops hold the money for up to 20 years. As you might imagine, when refunds are finally authorized, many of the folks that we're looking for are long gone from the country and can't be located because we don't have a valid address. The state does have an unclaimed property statute that speaks directly to capital credits of electric and telephone co-ops. And while certainly the statute is well-intended in practice, to be candid, it's somewhat burdensome. I think it's outdated for the times. And in our view, it's not as effective as perhaps it could be. It's also very expensive to administer. House Bill 233, if enacted, allows the cooperative electric and telephones to have the options of posting on the web. And I think the 30-day period in the bill comes from the existing statute under Civil Procedure Rule Number 4 says you have to publish 4 consecutive weeks in a newspaper of circulation in your area. So I believe that's where the 30 days comes from. Certainly, CVA has no objections to having it up there longer. In fact, one of the real benefits of putting it on the internet is it's always on. You know, when you publish in the newspaper, if somebody happened to miss the issue or be on vacation, they might not see it. But in having it on the internet, there's more chances to find it. And in fact, although I don't have any empirical data to support this, I would tell you that the consensus of our accounting folks at CVA is that we've been far more effective in posting invalid addresses and names of people on the internet, and we continue to trickle in finding these folks. The other important thing that I want to comment on is the expense of advertising under Civil Procedure Rule Number 4. And I want to talk about that in terms of the opportunity cost. CVEA, as I think many co-ops do, use their cheated capital credits to fund scholarship programs. And in the 15 years that we've been doing this, we've actually awarded over $100,000 in scholarships to graduating seniors of Copper Valley members. And all of these are scholarships are funded with unclaimed capital credits. So that's another, I think, significant reason to, you know, we want to do the best we can to find the folks. But if the funds do revert to the electric co-op, they're put to good use. With respect to Representative Book's question about why are newspapers not as an effective means, would like to just give you a couple of statistics about our cooperative. We have a significant change in population during the season, or during the summer. We have a recreation economy, tourism economy, temporary government employees, and of course fishing industries in our communities, and it brings a lot of people in the summer, and they don't always turn out to be year-round residents. So we have a continual turnover in our communities, which creates one problem. And to illustrate that, I wanted to share just a couple of statistics. Just this week, I analyzed our existing membership. Those are the people that are receiving power bills at Copper Valley today. And a couple of key stats. When you put that in the context of collecting the margins and allocating the capital credits and holding on to them for a generation, I hope that's instructive to Representative Luke's question about you know, the difficulty of finding folks out here in rural Alaska. We think that House Bill 233 is an excellent piece of legislation, and certainly we're here to urge the committee to move forward. I'm happy to try and respond to any further questions if you have any.
Through the chair, thank you very much. That did answer.
Representative Gardner.
And just to clarify on the record, I think this is what you said. You would have no objection to posting those names for 180 days. Maybe it's what you're already doing.
Copper Valley would not, Representative Gardner, have any objection to that.
Thank you.
Any further questions for Mr. Wilkinson? Thanks again, Mr. Wilkinson. Next, Jim Rowe.
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
Yeah, how are you doing, Jim?
Very good, sir. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me here, and I appreciate you and the committee hearing this bill today. I am the director of the Alaska Telephone Association, and among our membership are 7 telephone co-ops, rural telephone co-ops. We're certainly in support of this measure. It's a method of advertising and getting out to our membership that's probably getting more and more effective as we go forward. It's effective now, and if members pick up a website from the local telephone companies, they'll see an awful lot of advertising on there, as well as community events, and I think it's very much something that's going to be more in touch with the local community than is a general circulation newspaper. I mean, certainly if we look at the Anchorage newspaper, it's statewide, but it's really of, even if it gets out to a rural community, it's not well read. And I think this addresses the question from Representative Book somewhat, that it's really not of great interest to read in Bethel what's going on in the Anchorage community itself. Certainly the statewide politics are of interest. But the internet in this state is very active. We're one of the most connected states, or the most connected state in the United States. And it's an enthusiastic and well-received method of communication. The members, the co-op members of the Alaska Telephone Association appreciate very much this opportunity to inform our co-op members through the internet, and think it's far more effective. And we're in support of the bill, and I would hope it would move forward, and I'm open to questions.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Rowe. Would you have any opposition to having a 180-day posting instead of 30 days?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, we have no opposition to that. We're enthusiastic for the opportunity to post it that way.
Thank you.
Any further questions for Mr. Rowe? Thanks again, Jim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'd like the record reflect the You with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
All right. My name is Marilyn Leland, and I'm the executive director of the Alaska Power Association. We're the statewide trade association that represents the majority of the electric utilities that supply power throughout Alaska from Barrow to Unalaska and down to the Inside Passage. Our electric utility members provide power to about 500,000 Alaskans. And today I'm testifying in support of HB 233. Our membership believes that the new language proposed in this bill will give them a process that is more effective for locating former customers of electric utilities who are owed capital credits, and that the new process will save them and their customers many thousands of dollars in advertising expense. The current method of publishing a lengthy list of names four times in local newspapers is cumbersome, expensive, and not even very effective in most of the smaller communities in Alaska. In fact, in further answer to the question asked earlier, I think it comes down to if someone's no longer a customer of the utility in most of these smaller communities, that probably just means that they no longer even live there, so that they're not likely to see the long list of names when it is published. Another thing I wanted to point out to you is that using the internet for notice already has some precedent in Alaska's unclaimed property statutes. The Alaska Department of Revenue gives notice to owners of unclaimed property using an internet website as well. So in conclusion, allowing the utilities to advertise the address of their website where customers can find the list of names makes sense in this age of the internet, and we strongly encourage you to move this bill forward, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Are there any questions? Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
We have a gentleman from the RCA that's online for questions only. Does anybody have any questions for the RCA? I'll bring them up.
Does the RCA have an opinion?
Well, I guess we can ask him.
Yeah.
Rich Gazaway, are you with us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Did you hear the question?
Yes, the RCA doesn't take a position on this legislation.
Thank you.
I guess that'll work. Thanks again. I don't believe we have anybody else online, so I think I'll move it into the committee room. Do we have anybody in the committee room that would care to testify? I see a couple of people not making eye contact with me. I think at this point in time, we'll close it to public testimony and bring it back to the committee. I have a sneaky feeling there's a conceptual amendment hanging out there someplace.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would like to offer a conceptual amendment for page 2, line 4, change 30 days to 180 days. And I think that's all that would be needed, but it's a conceptual amendment, so.
Is there any objection? Well, I think we'll take the amendment. What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 233. Version 25LS0779/L from committee with any attached fiscal notes or recommendations, individual recommendations
attached,
and attached conceptual amendments on this case.
Seeing no opposition, the bill is out of committee as amended. Brief at ease while we, nobody leave.
Right there.
The next bill is House Bill 227. I think we're humbled by the presence of a member of the House and a member of the Senate staffs to carry this for us.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Aurora Hawk. I am an aide for Representative Beth Curtula. She apologizes that she is not able to be here today to present the bill. And since this has been a collaborative effort of the Juneau delegation, and he's done all the work, I'm going to ask Jesse Keel from Senator Elton's office to present the bill.
Welcome, Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Jesse Keel, staff to Senator Kim Elton, and temporary adjunct to Representative Curtula's office. an honor, I assure you. The bill before you today, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, is House Bill 227. It would implement the Uniform Money Services Act here in Alaska. The Uniform Act, drafted by the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws, has several sections, two of which we propose for incorporation into Alaska statutes, those regulating money transmitters and currency exchange businesses. There are 47 states, Mr. Chairman, that regulate money transmitters, and this bill ensures safety and soundness in these financial institutions, generally known as money service businesses, for the Alaskans who use them generally instead of banks. Banks are, of course, otherwise regulated. This bill has no impact on Alaska's banks, Mr. Chairman. We know that Alaskans and visitors to our state have in the past been victimized by unscrupulous money transmitters or those who claim to be who take money with a promise to deliver and never do so. Licensure would put in place a prior restraint on those unscrupulous individuals. Through its bonding and net worth requirements, this bill would ensure safety and soundness for consumers, as well as some basic reporting requirements. Mr. Chairman, the federal government is concerned about money services businesses. It is concerned for two primary reasons. The first is the risk of their use in money laundering. The second is the risk of their use in terrorism financing. The federal government watches for these crimes, Mr. Chairman. It also encourages states to work with them by licensing MSBs. This bill ensures law enforcement in Alaska and bank regulators in Alaska can coordinate with the federal government to make sure that these businesses aren't abused by people who avoid banks because they want to avoid scrutiny. The bill is revenue neutral to the state. I believe you have a fiscal note before you from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development that shows that it would add one half-time examiner, the costs of which would be borne by regulated businesses. The bill, Mr. Chairman, has support from a consortium of large companies in the money services industry. These are companies you've probably heard of, Western Union, MoneyGram, many of their colleagues and competitors. The bill has support from both small businesses and the Small Money Transmitters Association. It is supported by the department, also supported by the Alaska Public Interest Research Group, a consumer advocacy group, Cruise Lines on behalf of their employees, and the Alaska Bankers Association. I have, Mr. Chairman, I believe a small phalanx of people online available if the committee has questions for them. I am happy to answer and address any questions you may have about the bill.
I believe Representative Ledoux has the first one.
You mentioned, Jesse, that in the past Alaskans have been victimized by money transfers. Do you have any specifics on that?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I do not have a list of incidents. I am familiar through the small business person here in Senator Elton and Representative Petula's community who brought the idea for state regulation to our offices. Familiar with one incident in which somebody came to town, had relatives on some of the cruise ships, got a hotel room, offered much lower rates than any of the established businesses with storefronts, and the money somehow never got where it was going. The best estimate available is roughly $30,000 was absconded with.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you give us an idea of somewhat what these rates are for $500 or $1,000 transfer?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, the industry is competitive, and I am familiar with one small niche company, and the owner and operator of that company is here in the room and could certainly speak more definitively than I to his rates. The industry is competitive, and generally operators, especially niche operators in particular communities, will offer lower rates than banks for general wire transfers, which of course must go from a regulated bank to a regulated bank and are not implicated in the bill. I don't have a catalog of, for instance, what Western Union charges versus what a small money transmitter would charge. I'm happy to get that information to you, or certainly we could have the gentleman.
Yeah, I believe it was like $5 or $20 for 1,000. It's minimal, I believe.
My recollection, Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, is that the one individual with whom I'm most familiar charges something on the order of the rates you stated, and then at higher, larger amounts, I believe $20 for amounts over $2,000 up to, I think, $5,000, although being a sort of catering to a particular niche, he doesn't have many people bring $5,000 through the door.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representing the bill.
So what's this going to cost each of the businesses?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the Division of Banking and Securities, which would regulate these businesses, has estimated, based on the number of new licensees that would be active in the state, has estimated a charge somewhere in the neighborhood of $2,000 per year for a money transmitter. Currency exchange businesses would be licensed biennially, and so the rate for them, of course, would be half on an annualized basis.
Follow.
You know, that's a pretty hefty fee for some of these smaller storefront type operations. I mean, some of them, you know, are connected with other entities, and so maybe it would be the $2,000 for everybody. But I'm just thinking in my community. I mean, we have niche transfers that transfer to, let's say, Thailand, or another niche transfer. I think their niche is Laos. And I mean, these are really tiny, you know, mother and papa, mom and papa businesses. And $2,000 would be, I think, a fairly significant sum to some of these places.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ledoux, I certainly understand the concern. The most of, we believe, the licensees will be generally somewhat larger operations. Through their license fees, they will defray some of the cost of regulation to these smaller businesses. But by adopting a uniform fee structure, we level it out and make administration significantly more efficient. There are other states that have adopted other models. This model is proposed in large part to keep the fiscal impact as low as possible. I think with reference specifically to mom-and-pop operations, I would, with the permission of the chairman, defer to Mr. Alan Moore, who, with his wife, runs quite literally a mom-and-pop operation here in the capital city.
Are there any questions for Jesse before we go outside the room and before we adopt the CS's working draft in the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt CS for House Bill 227, version C, Charlie, as the working document.
Looks like we got it. Thank you, Jesse. You're going to be around?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair.
Well, I think first we're going to go out to Ezra Levine. Are you with us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name for the record is Ezra Levine. I am the counsel in Washington, D.C. For the Money Services Roundtable, which is the organization which represents American Express, Western Union, MoneyGram, RIA, TravelX, the large national non-bank money transmitters. We are in full support with House Bill 227. We believe it's effective safety and soundness legislation. I'm available for any questions that you may have.
Any questions for Mr. Levine? Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Is there anybody else online that would care to testify on this bill? Nope. I will bring it back into the...
I've got another question for Jesse, I guess. So one of these national chains, would they have to pay $2,000 for each store, or is it one $2,000 for no matter how many outlets they had?
For the record, once again, Mr. Chairman, Jesse Keel, staff to Senator Elton and helping out Representative Petula. These national corporations would pay one license fee. The bill's safety and soundness requirements would require some additional security, a bond or a pledge, certificate of deposit, something like that, for additional locations. However, the Uniform Act sets up a structure of what are called authorized delegates. So if you buy a Western Union money transfer at Safeway, Safeway hasn't had to pay a license fee. Western Union has paid the license fee and placed additional surety on its on the location there.
Thank you.
The 47 states that are currently under this, are they under the uniform law or are they under various?
Mr. Chairman, the current nationwide regulatory structure is a little bit of a mishmash. There are currently four Uniform Act states, Iowa, Texas, Vermont, and Washington State. There are a couple of model acts out there. I know I have read Hawaii's Act, and it bears a remarkable similarity to the Uniform Act. However, they base theirs off a different model. There are a few states still using very old sale of checks laws to attempt to regulate money transmission businesses. It's not generally a good fit. One of the benefits of using this Uniform Act, Mr. Chairman, is that a money transmission business licensed in another state, either that has the Uniform Act or something very similar, has a lot less paperwork to do initially to get their license. There's reciprocity isn't the word, Mr. Chairman, but functionally approval by virtue of being licensed elsewhere in a state with similar requirements.
Oh, thanks. Any further questions for Jesse? Let's see. In the room we have Mark Davis. How you doing, Mark?
Good to see you, Mr. Chairman.
Please join us.
For the record, my name is Mark Davis. I'm the Director of the Division of Banking and Securities for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. We're in support of this bill because it is the Uniform Money Transmitters Act. A good question was asked, what other acts are out there? There is a model act that has been put forward by a trade association of the money transmitters. I think that particular model is not as good. It doesn't have as much protection for the consumer and doesn't have the right structure. Mr. Krell's right that several states have tried to use or are using their check cashing statutes to cover this. And I would note for this record that the bill you have before you does delete from the Uniform Act the provisions that apply to check cashing establishments. That was a decision made by the sponsor. In general, we would support a bill at some point to cover check cashing and private ATMs, which are not covered here. And that probably makes sense to put that in separate legislation. The reason the Uniform Act has check cashing in it is because so many states are using their old check cashing statutes. Alaska does not have one. Alaska does not have a lot of regulatory framework right now for non-bank financial institutions. So we have no regulation of mortgages, no regulation of money transmitters, no regulation of check cashing, et cetera. So what this bill does is it should help consumers through disclosure. You have to post what you're charging, and you have to offer a receipt for what you did, and you have to allow for a refund. And that's a change in the committee substitute, which we support. It also clarifies that the fees charged are not the fees charged by the businesses, but the fees charged for the licensing. It also is pro-law enforcement because there is an issue with some of these companies, and I only want to say some of them, with regard to possible violations of what is commonly known as the Bank Secrecy Act, and we monitor that for our banks. That is, when a bank transmits money, the state bank, then we examine for that, and the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency does that for a federal bank. Right now, with these people, there is no requirement. They should register with the U.S. Department of Treasury FinCEN or Financial Crime Center. We ran a check through the Yellow Pages, my staff, of some of the companies in Alaska and checked them against the FinCEN list. And you may not be surprised to hear that some of the companies in Alaska that should register with FinCEN are not. So there's a registration problem, and that's important for law enforcement. There is a limited burden in the sense on if you have reciprocity within the state. And I think the licensing requirement is appropriate. We've broadened the permissible investment so small companies could post something other than a bond to make sure they could post all kinds of security so that it wouldn't burden them. Bonds can be very expensive, and I think that's unfair to small business, so we support that reform. We support the, like I said, the disclosures of receipts and to post what's being charged. We support the confidentiality in 0655407, although we note that's just for the licensees and us to keep the information confidential. There is sometimes a problem with whether the information you give to a money transmitter stays confidential. So that's the only other issue I have. I'm sensitive to Representative Ledoux's question about the impact. We required under this act to provide you with a physical note that wouldn't generate any expenditures of general fund. Generally, the Division of Banking and Securities operates on receipts. That is, we don't use any general fund monies for anything we do. And we set our fees based upon the services provided. We've made a good faith estimate about how many companies might be regulated. With payday lending, we did that 2 years ago, and we underestimated it. So we may be off. We thought there'd be maybe 20 to 30 payday lenders, and we have 30 new licensees this year. So so the fees are actually going down on a per company basis. So I don't know exactly what we're making a good faith estimate. I can understand that doing it by fee-based only, if we don't have a lot of people sign up, could get expensive.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark, so I understand that the fee that you set for the money services companies is based on the fact that you are trying to create a neutral fiscal note?
Correct. The bill states in a provision that we would set the fees at the actual cost. And that's typical of what my division does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ledoux?
Nope.
Representative Booth?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you give us an example or cite the results, I guess, would be a better way to term it. You said a couple years ago you were looking at the payday lenders and your estimates were off. Was this set up on the same sort of a pay scale? A charge?
Right. Right.
Could you give me an example of what happened in that case?
Well, we added one examiner for payday lending, and I think we've got more than enough money to cover the costs. So the next time around on payday lending, we'll probably be able to lower the fees. That is, that we have quite a few new people in the industry. Basically, what those licensing bills do is change the industry. We had 10 payday lenders exit the market. That is, we either put them out of business or they decided to leave.
We had about 30 to 40 new companies join the industry, and we collected $768,000 in restitution from illegal loans and gave that back to consumers when we started out. Our first examination showed, unfortunately, loans that were not in compliance with law.
Is it primarily interest or what?
The rollovers. Some of these poor folks had their payday loan rolled, and therefore that's illegal. Some of them have been charged interest in violation of statute. We won't relicense anyone unless they make full restitution.
Representative?
To follow up the question, I'm trying to figure or trying to question you, sir, on whether or not you've made the correct estimates in regard to this. Do you think that you have the appropriate number of examiners, investigators out there to cover what you're trying to correct here?
Well, there's two parts to that. First is, how many people do I think we need? We think a half a position is probably what we'll need. We can, because I don't think there's that much involved with these exams based on our discussions with some other states that my staff did. That is, these are much simpler examinations than a bank or payday lender, and they tend to keep records. If they're registered with FinCEN, as they should be, they're already keeping good records under federal law, so that makes it simpler. With regard to how many, that's the other question. I mean, if we have 100 people and we only have half the position, the fees are pretty low. If we have 20 companies sign up, then the fees get higher. How many? We were trying to estimate just going through the phone book and looking around. We don't really know. We know MoneyGram is in the state. We know Western Union is in the state. We know American Express is, but they operate through delegates, as you've been told. That is, they go to a company like Safeway and they open a kiosk. How many standalone? I would defer to the representative from the industry here. Because they're unlicensed, we don't have a good number.
Representative Ledoux.
So,
if my understanding is correct, let's say you've estimated 20 this year or 30 this year. And so at 30, it's going to cost each one about $2,000. But if you've estimated high and there tend to be fewer of them, then next year you're going to be charging even more money for this?
Correct. That's the way this bill is drafted. And I'm not arguing in favor of that. I'm giving you the concept of keeping my division is fees based, which is how the bill is drafted.
Follow.
Now, who knows how many ones, other than what the big ones, the Western Unions, the.
Well, there is a representative here, I believe, from the Trade Association that probably is a better person to ask than myself.
Okay, I guess when he testifies, okay. I'll ask him.
But I mean, we it's a difficult question to ask because they're unregulated. We know that, for example, the issue, Mr. Crowe gave the example of someone operating illegally out of a hotel room. There are people all over the place. What we found with payday lending was when we went out to pawn shops originally, checked them out, a lot of them were doing loans that didn't really have signs up. And a lot of them decided not to do loans anymore, which is fine. That's their decision. And I think this will be the same process. We'll have to find these folks and make sure they're licensed.
And I'm kind of thinking about my community. I mean, I know there are a number of these money transfers at the grocery stores. Not necessarily, I mean, at Safeway probably has Western Union, but I'm thinking about some of the small mama and papa grocery stores which specialize in either Laotian or Thai or Filipino or, Hispanic food. And I'm going to bet you if I looked in the phone book under wire transfers, I wouldn't find these places listed. You just kind of know when you go in because it's got this little sign that says dinero's sent.
Representative Judith, through the chair, you are correct, and we're aware of that issue. This is an unregulated industry, so it doesn't have postings or regular. Some of those small, however, liquor stores and other companies are associated with some of the nationals. We have looked around informally at that. Some of them actually are associated. I mean, Western Union basically tends to be in Alaska in grocery stores, but mm-hmm. some of the other companies like MoneyGram are not, and there you can find them along the roadways up north, and you can probably find them in your home district in Kodiak, and some of the other American Express has a wide variety of money transmitters, especially during the tourist season. So I mean, you raise a very good point, and I don't have hard information for an unregulated industry.
Representative Booth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you feel that through the process that you're initiating here, that you're able to adjust in an appropriate time frame pending your findings in the next year so that you would be able to adjust on a fee-based commitment that is appropriate for this endeavor?
Mr. Bush, to the chair, I think we are. We're required to provide a report to the legislature. And in that report, I think one thing we have to address is how much did it actually cost each licensee? Have we found licensees that are saying it's just way too high? One thing we might put in the bill would be in ability and regulation to set the fee. If you're concerned about that, that would be up to the committee, of course. That would not be the Uniform Act, but I mean that probably does not violate the spirit of it. No one wants to adopt a regulation that is going to put small Alaska businesses out of business. That's right. Just not the purpose of regulation.
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Cotto, and Representative Newman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Somewhat of a comment as to the discussion that's been ongoing. And I think that the fact that this remains revenue neutral to the state is probably a good thing. I mean, I really like that. But as you stated, if there's 200 businesses doing this, it's going to be less per cost per business than if there's only 20. But if there's only 20, that means that those 20 are going to be having more customers to help cover their cost of that $2,000 instead of $20. So it's a matter of supply and demand. I think that it's very neutral in that aspect, and it's neutral revenue to the state, and I think that's good legislation.
Any further questions? Thanks again.
Thanks, committee, for the opportunity to testify.
I believe we have one person in the room that hasn't signed up but is welcome to testify. Please join us. And please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Alan Moore. I'm the compliance officer and the manager for Similong Financial Services. Of course, we're a mom and pop, what you were talking about. And we're testifying in favor of the bill for a number of reasons. One of them is that we belong to an association called the National Money Transmitters Association out of New York. We've been doing this. This is our ninth year now. We have our own network in Indonesia, and we represent another company that has their own network in the Philippines. We lost our bank account here in September. This is something that's been going on across the United States. Big banking firms have been advised by the auditors that we are a risky business. So they've been terminating our accounts across the country, not just here in Alaska. And we've secured another account here in the last couple of weeks. It's cost me many thousands of dollars to do it, but we have one. So we want this bill to give us the respect and the the standing that we deserve as a licensed, regulated company. So that's our own personal, you know, reason to have it, but it also safety and soundness of the industry. I know Representative Ledoux was mentioning the costs. It's a couple thousand dollars, I'm sure, but the people you were speaking of probably are agents for a company that has the network to be able to dispense the money. Like MoneyGram. MoneyGram has agents all across the world. The company we represent in New York has the network in the Philippines to send money there. And most of your small grocery stores and stuff that collect money are collecting money for the parent company, and they would be the ones required to get the license. So if I had an agent, say, in Ketchikan or Skagway, they would operate under my license, and there'd be no charge for them. Although I am required by the BSA to monitor them, train them, and keep all of the required records, that we have a software program that does that. And it's hooked into the OFAC list, which is basically the same as the no-fly, only it's like a no-send list. And so that's pretty much, unless you have any other questions, that I have to say.
Are there any questions for Mr. Moore?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Close it out to public testimony and bring it back to the committee. What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move CS for House Bill number 227, version 25LS0814/C, Charlie from committee with any attached fiscal notes or individual recommendations.
Is there any opposition? It moves on to the next stop, which is, where's it going, Jesse? Finance? Well, thank you again, and I think with that, we'll adjourn. Nobody leave.
Yep.